Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Merry Christmas, Egg Chasers. This is the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast. The podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously, and the podcast about rugby that is there for you. 52 weeks of the year, and once again, delivering on that promise as we sit here on Christmas Eve morning, feeling very festive, far more festive than when the deluge of plastic arrives in our collective homes. I'm here with JB in the Rugby Dungeon.
Hello, Tim. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you. You've got your lovely new bull trainers on.
No bull.
No bull. How do you say that? No bull. No bull.
No bull, yeah.
No bull. Is it no bull?
I mean, I love no bull gear. I really do. The name is just hard to say, isn't it? It just
no bull.
Roll off.
No bull.
Without sounding like you're saying, like, noble surname.
Yeah. And Phil, yep. In his Brooks trainers, you two have been for a run then.
We have been
we
for a run.
Where did you go?
Fallowfield and back.
Very, very sedate 7K. Very gentle.
I like the fact you're dishing out the treats early on Christmas Eve because JB's wearing incredibly tight lycra.
These are my lifting shorts.
Running shorts, and Phil's wearing incredibly tight running leggings.
Yeah. Just giving the people the chores and what they want. It's not often they see real men running around the streets.
I know.
We got a few wolf whistles on our little route.
Yeah, we were incredibly aggressively sexualized.
Who can blame them?
And the
people of Chorlton are only human.
I mean, one guy actually stopped his car and shouted at us.
Yeah. Genuinely.
Genuinely, we got accosted by a man in a car.
What did he say?
It's a guy that we both know.
Oh, okay.
But
he did aggressively shout from across the room.
A white man.
And there was a number of other people, I'm sure, that went, oh, yeah, that reminds me, I've got to get the chipolatas today.
Yeah, exactly right.
So we've been exercising. You've been exercising as well, Tim, this morning.
I went to my CrossFit box to do the 12 Days of Christmas WOD. How come you didn't do yours, JB?
I did mine yesterday.
Oh, I did it yesterday. There you go.
Well, I was meant to do it. I didn't actually. I stopped. I got out of the house, and unlike me, they just got on top of me, and I went for coffee instead.
Oh, good lad.
Yeah. But it's the first time I've not trained, God knows how long.
Yeah, you need your rest, though, don't you?
Do you?
And let's hope we have a little bit of that over the next week or so, and I hope you do as well. And, yeah, a reminder that we are there for you, as I say, 52 weeks of the year, and you can get more or... As well as getting more, you can just show your support for the podcast, help keep the lights on by going to patreon.com/eggchasers, where there is extra content.
Yeah, and I think this week on Patreon, if you want to do one later for, you know, the patrons for their little Christmas gift, we can discuss the most embarrassing DORship in Premiership Rugby history. Who is the most embarrassing DOR ever in the Premiership?
It's a great question.
And there's only one winner.
Well,
there's a few in the discussion, I think.
I mean, there's
we'll save it for later. Let's not.
There's one very topical, and there's other.
Yes.
There's lots of other conversations to be had there.
Oh, isn't there? Isn't there?
So yeah, that's a good little one. As for this podcast right now, I'm curious because tomorrow morning my kids, I'll probably have to get them out of bed. They'll be like, oh, lying a bit more. Whereas yours are going to struggle to sleep tonight, I imagine.
They are.
Yes.
They will definitely struggle. Which is why we sedate them.
Anaesthetist wives.
Exactly.
Yeah, right.
It's never gone wrong before.
You snaffle a little bit from work.
Exactly.
There you go, love. Count back from 10. Excellent. And you're all at home. Who's cooking tomorrow?
I'm cooking on Boxing Day. We're going to my parents tomorrow. Nice. And then I'm doing curries on Boxing Day.
Nice.
Full curries.
Yeah, I've got my sister-in-law there and her family staying for five days, and I have planned in meticulous detail every breakfast, lunch and dinner from the day they arrived yesterday until the day that they leave.
Mm.
In detail. So I'm doing everything.
Outstanding. The I just want to say, getting ahead at Christmas is completely rubbish. I just popped into Costco yesterday because I wanted to get a few bits and bobs. And their free-range Norfolk bronze turkeys were 30 quid off.
Really?
So you could get like... It was unbelievable. They were giving them away, basically.
Wow.
We had a messed up Christmas because of father-in-law ended up in hospital last year. And so plans changed and we bought a turkey last minute on Christmas Eve. And it was like 50 quid off, something like that, from M&S.
And grab one.
Yeah.
Tomorrow? I don't think we'll be open tomorrow.
Today,
yes.
Today.
Boxing Day.
Yeah. Either late today, late on Christmas Eve or Boxing Day, you'll get some deals.
Yeah. Well, I hope you have a lovely Christmas and thank you very much for listening and your support all year. contact@edchasers.gmail.com is where you can get in touch on the email, and we've had some great ones this week, which I'll pepper the podcast through. But how do you want to go? What do you want to start? What do you want to do?
What are we going to start with? Premiership, I'd say. Unless you want to talk about something a bit more topical. Bill Sweeney has been doing the rounds and saying things which are ill-advised and stupid.
And incendiary.
Incendiary.
Very unlike Bill Sweeney. Let's talk about that. But let's start with a bit of positivity, goodwill to all men, and
let's start with the Premiership because
wonderful.
Here's what I'm going to lead off with. I really enjoyed the Premiership this week. Like, for all the doom and gloom around it, and I am Mr. Doom and Gloom when it comes to rugby. Bloody hell, it was a good weekend. I mean, it is still, despite the best efforts of everybody involved, it's still somehow a good competition.
It is still, and part of that is the salary cap, although different teams spending to various degrees up to the salary cap. And part of it is, as we've discussed the last few weeks, the redistribution of talent. So even though teams got weaker, they've then had an influx of players to make them stronger again. So both of those two things.
Yeah, and had that influx of players at way below market rate.
Yes, yeah. And if you didn't, it's a silver lining type argument, but if you didn't have the three clubs going bump, I suspect the quality of the product would be significantly worse and the club's ability to compete in Europe would be significantly worse than it currently is.
Yeah.
But right now, it is a good product. And the games this week are testament to that. All the games were close. Even Falcons versus Bristol was close. Mm-hmm. The least close game was one of the ones that we expected to be the closest, and that was Exeter Chiefs, who hammered a very strong Leicester Tigers team.
Yeah, well,
we're going to get bored. No, I'm not going to get bored personally, but we're going to get repetitive in just saying how remarkable Rob Baxter is as a bloke, and Henry Slade for that matter.
So my good friends at the podcast Talking Tribe were on WhatsApp to me the other day, and they were at a meeting.
Tribe Talking.
What did I just say then?
Talking Tribe. That's right. I just want to make sure if people want to go and find them, because they are good lads.
Exactly. They were saying at one of the Exeter members' meetings, Exeter are £1.8 million underneath the cap.
Now,
if that is true, and I don't know if it's true, I mean, if Rob Baxter's saying that in meetings, which I assume that's where it's come from, that's amazing. That is really, really... It's even more... I mean, it's amazing anyway. If they were at the cap and doing this, it's amazing with the new team. But if those numbers are correct, it's even more amazing.
It wouldn't actually surprise me that much because they're just kids. Like, there are... You look at the team and you've got Slade, who's not a kid. You've got Devoto, who's not a kid but has been injured for a long, long period of time. You've got Yendel, who is... Leicester, Exeter clubman. You got Scotty Seo, who's been brought in on decent money, and you got Vermaelen. Everyone else is kids.
Yendel as well.
Yendel I mentioned. Yeah. Everyone else is they are kids. These are guys who will not be on huge money, and they are getting bang for their buck out of this team massively.
And that means he can keep this team together in the way that he did Exeter 1.0.
Yes.
Or 2.0.
Not only can keep them together, he can afford to give them pay rises.
Well, that's the only way he's going to keep them together, because Greg Fisselout is legit.
Yep.
And Daffith Jenkins.
Jenkins.
Oh my goodness.
Is legit.
What a player. Wales have got the heir to Alan Wynne-Jones right there, haven't they?
Well, we were sort of on our run, we were discussing Exeter, because what else would you discuss on a run? I'm like, if you could boil down like the most important part of rugby and make it really simple. So I gave the example of football. Say if I was coaching a football team and we just boiled it down, what aspect of football kind of correlates with winning? I don't know what it is, but let's just say it's fitness, because that requires no skill. And you just get these tremendously motivated young men who want to make a name for themselves in a framework where they can just work towards one thing, which is fitness, they're going to be really good. And I think that's what Rob Bax has done. He's sort of made the vision so clear for them. You just work towards that vision. Forget everything else. If everyone just does this one thing, we'll be okay. There's a little bit of like, well, the New England Patriots don't really work now because it seems to be it's all about Tom Brady. But if you believe what the New England Patriots were doing, which is like just concentrate on your individual job and do it to the best of your ability, everything will come together. Yeah, it kind of works. And I'll tell you the other thing which I thought about regarding Exeter Chiefs, and you'll find this a weird crossover, but Everton. So Everton at the moment are in the Champions League places, if you account for the points that that's been taken off them, right?
The 10-point deduction.
Do you know the story for Everton, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So just if you don't know it, they've been fined, they've lost some points. And
but mysteriously, City aren't being investigated.
And Chelsea.
Yeah.
And Chelsea, yeah.
So, I mean, you won't believe this, but, you know, Liverpool, you know, people in Liverpool support... I'm not going to go there. Let's just put it this way. They've found a reason to play, right? Bound together that team, and that's probably one of the reasons that they're doing well, because they feel the world is against them, which is unusual for Liverpoolians. Nevertheless,
you got there in the end.
I got there in the end. I managed to get it in. Thank God. Right. And how many times do you see DORs, no matter what it is, trying to get the guys to believe in something, to buy into it? And I think that's what Rob Bax has done. Mm. He's given them something to buy into. And as soon as they're bought into it, you can make young men do pretty much anything as a group if they're all involved. It's a simple formula, but it's not easy. And Rob Bax seems to do it.
It's not easy. And the way, like, the thing that I was most impressed with in this game against Leicester was the unity and the cohesion in that defensive structure, which is it's fundamentally around hard work and getting off the line and getting in the right place. But to do it over and over again against World Cup winners, against a team, Leicester are a very good team. They've got very senior internationals. They've got half a dozen World Cup semi-finalists in that starting lineup. It's a hell of a Leicester team, and to shut them down,
and a World Cup winner as their quarterback
and the number 8,
and the number 8,
who's like fundamentally the most important players on the pitch and the way that they play. It was absolutely huge performance from Exeter to repeatedly shut them down.
At whatever level of rugby you play, and I see it with my son's team now, is that defensive effort that you talked about. Mm. That's one of the things I love about rugby, is any tiny little crack becomes a giant canyon.
Yeah.
In a defensive effort, unless you're mentally like doing it for that mate that stood beside you, that those tiny little gaps, cracks in a group will show up in defence, and I think it does speak to the atmosphere that Rob Baxter has created.
Yeah, because it's very hard to play like Exeter do as individuals. Like, you couldn't.
You can't.
One person,
no chance.
When your mates are doing it for you, yeah, okay, I can sort of buy into this, but you don't want to let anyone down. I think it's amazing. I think they're just an incredible team.
Yeah,
they really are. And this, I think the important thing is, so this team will perform very well in individual games at the moment, and across the season they will perform well. Whether right now it is sufficient for them to do what the Exeter 1.0 did 3-4 years ago and more, and win the league and be competing in Europe, probably not yet. But if they do keep this team together, which they've got every shot at, because they're so young and they're relatively cheap at the moment, this team in a few years, think of the potential, the extra cohesion that this team will have in 2, 3, 4 years' time. Exeter, it is very exciting.
If you think about Exeter 1.0, a great team, eventually, but look at them, say, 3 years before their journey accumulated, and you would say, who are they? Exeter made those guys rather than vice versa.
Oh yeah, Exeter made them. Baxter and the systems that he put in place made those guys.
Yeah. I wonder how many podcasts we can start in a row with something similar to what we've done for the last two podcasts.
Warranted. The one that's been a surprise package, although I suppose it's a different. Okay, let me actually reverse and ask the question. So we've marvelled at the plan that Rob Baxter has put in place. Should we also marvel at the plan that Bath put in place, which is buy £1 million fly half and give him the keys
and a load of big South African forwards?
Yep, helps. Really helps.
Do those two things and you'll be all right.
Yeah,
fair play to Bath, because this is, we've said this before, but Bath have had names before. They've had talent all across the team. For the last 10 years, they have not wanted for lack of big names and lack of talent. They have wanted, they've just had this piece missing to bring them together.
Well, I think you're right. It's two pieces. And it's what I like, again, this is just rugby forever. Tight head prop, fly half.
Yeah.
That's it.
Okay, so just think about this. England play tomorrow. Would you be happy with the Bath back line, but with George Ford in it?
So, Gallagher, Thocknessinger and Muir. Yes,
I mean, I mean, if you had to pick a Premiership backline, that might be a better question. Is there a better Premiership backline that you would just pick off the shelf?
Yeah, I mean, they're doing well. They're coached by Lee Blackett, who knows how to play a bit of rugby. I mean, maybe Finn Russell is just that good.
He just makes everyone else look better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But he's not like...
Ollie Lawrence is class. I mean, like, it is easy to throw passes to space when Ollie Lawrence runs into that space. He's got to be there. He's got to know where to go.
Again, we come back to the question with Ollie Lawrence. He's so good at 13. Should he play 13 for England?
If a coach moves that boy from 13 to 12, he should be fired immediately. There is no... Unless it's a club game and you are in the most dire of straits, he stays at 13. And if you move him, you're incompetent. There is no two ways about it.
He's so good at 13.
He is.
But that's what anyone has done, because people just compare him to Manu Tuilagi, who, again, was a 13 that's been shunted inside to 12.
Do you know, it's actually a good comparison. Some people might say, oh, yeah, it's not really fair. No, it probably is fair.
I think he's got a bit more to his game. He's a bit more,
better passer, isn't
a bit more rounded, better distributor.
There again, when Manu first landed in Sale, I was asking the boys, like, you know, what do you think of this guy? And a lot of them said his skill's brilliant. So, but you don't really see that in games.
Yeah, because he just carries so hard and hits so hard.
Doesn't anymore.
That's that was the overwhelming noticeable thing about him for so long.
Joe Cocconasinga, I mean, I've never been a Joe Cocconasinga fan.
Nor me, really.
I think I'm getting there. Mm. The two finishes were legit finishes by him.
Yeah.
Legit finishes. And although it wasn't him that scored the tries against Gloucester a few weeks ago, it was him that broke the fullback to allow those tries to be scored by Will Muir. Just between the two of them, they're an absolute menace.
And Thocknessinger this week, so after he scored his two tries, there was another pass to him on the right-hand side late in the second half. And it didn't actually result in a Bath try. But when he replayed it, there were seven Harlequins players tracked him into the corner. Seven players. Because previously, when there was two or three, he broke through them and scored. So it's like a Manu or a Julian Surveyor type situation where, because he's so dangerous, it just draws in defenders, because the risk of not overcommitting defenders is too great.
But again, I wonder, how much is it Finn Russell? Like, Joe Thocknessinga has that in his locker, but how much is it Finn Russell? Because, like, Marcus Smith is very, very, very good. He's not Finn Russell.
Yeah.
Well, okay.
As we saw.
With Thocknessinga, I think it's probably a couple of things, because Thocknessinga, if you listen to the England coaches over the summer, they were talking him up. Now, he didn't make the World Cup squad, but they were talking him up saying he is in the best form of his life, the best shape of his life, his body fat ratios, his muscle, his 100 metres or 60 metres or 30 metre times, all of his one rep maxes, they were all off the charts for him, the best he's ever recorded. So he's in an amazing shape, and he's got the right playmakers around him. It's Finn Russell, but Ajomo and or Redpath and Lawrence. It all adds to it.
I'm not going to say it's the Finn Russell effect on Cocconasinga, because the issues I've always seen with him are very similar to another winger who is nothing like him. So Aaron Reid and Joe Cocconasinga, I think, suffer from the same problem on the wing. They just are not yet good enough at rugby. And I mean that in terms of they have the raw physical skill.
Raw attributes, right.
They're amazing. But they do silly things like they stop before contact, or they catch the ball static. They don't read the game as well. Yeah. I remember watching Joe Cocconasinga for London Irish, and the difference between how he plays compared to how Alex Lewington plays was just night and day. And everyone was talking about Joe Cocconasinga because he's big and impressive and all the rest of it. Alex Lewington absolutely tore the Premiership to pieces in his first return back. I think by Christmas he had more metres made than anyone else. Like three times the amount of metres of Cocconasinga. No one mentioned it. Because he's a good rugby player and gets himself in those positions to exploit his skill, Cocconasinga's now starting to do that. Aaron Reid's now starting to do that. And you can see, I mean, that could be, that's coaching, I think. So,
here's another question, just sort of to dovetail it, and with England in mind, which January the 4th, Steve Borthwick will name his wider training squad ahead of the Six Nations. If Joe Thockenesinger is in, it would be merited. But Adam Radwan, if he isn't, and Joe Thockenesinger is, he'll be thinking, I have to leave Newcastle.
He has 100%. To, yeah.
And he has to
he'll be thinking that anyway.
He'll be thinking that anyway. But I just wonder that with players like that, because... I'm not trying to take anything away from Joe Thockenesinger, but I'm saying imagine Adam Radwan plonked into that bath.
Side he
on
would
the right
do
wing.
So well.
Imagine.
He'd be,
or any side, frankly.
Yeah,
he just needs to move.
Radwan's
anyone
a hell
who
of a
wants
player.
Any career in rugby needs to move from Newcastle. It's just not
100%.
There is not a viable path for them to proceed as they are. Unless you've got Rob Baxter, which they don't. They have Alex Codling, and who's, I'm sure, a very nice man, but is not Rob Baxter.
Yeah,
right, you need an incredible coaching talent. Nothing about Newcastle makes sense to me. Their DOR doesn't make sense. His history of how he got there doesn't make... Well, it does make sense, actually, if you know who his dad is. But, you know, other than that, none of it makes sense in any way. So, I said it last week, I'll say it again, they're currently just the freeloaders of the Premiership. They're enjoying their TV money and they're not contributing back to the league. And no amount of nonsense... I've got a small child walking. Get out.
That's the Christmas spirit.
Yeah.
Small child on Christmas Eve. Get out
you get.
Bah, humbug.
Throw a turkey at her.
Just on fly halves, did you see, so Rugby Inside Line on Twitter did a very interesting comparison of the Premiership starting, the 10 Premiership Ooh. First choice fly halves on, so this is statistics powered by Oval, on... what they refer to as the kick-pass ratio. So, do you kick more or do you pass more as a 10? Now, on the... So they have it as the kicker end of the spectrum and the distributor end of the spectrum. The kicker kicks more, the distributor passes more.
Mm-hmm.
Who do you think is the top of the... either the distributor or the kicker end of the spectrum in the Premiership?
Well, I know what the...
distributor, I would have guessed Sheedy.
Sheedy is
a great shout.
Sheedy is number one.
Well,
he is the most distributor-ing fly half in the Premiership. Very good.
I would never have got that.
That's just the way Bristol play.
Yeah.
So, okay. Number two, then, is it like Will Cannon?
Brett Conan.
Brett Conan, sorry.
Brett Conan's middle of the road. He's
you don't need to tell me that.
He is 50-50 pretty much. He, for every one that he kicks, he passes one.
Interesting.
Biggest kicker
is that lack of identity.
George Ford.
Say that again.
Biggest kicker, George Ford.
No, George Ford is middle of the road as well.
Is he?
Roughly, for every one he kicks, he passes one.
Yeah, okay. Think about scrum halves that kick.
That's an interesting angle
where,
as well.
Where the nines take the kicking responsibility.
Yeah, so like Pollard sounds to me like a guy who would kick a lot, but I bet he doesn't.
Because his scrum half will kick.
Yeah, because... You know,
they'll kick to contest.
So Pollard is the second most kickiest.
So I'm wrong.
But I think he's probably... The nine also kicks a lot in Leicester, therefore he's probably lower than he otherwise would have been.
All right, then. I'm going to say it will be, I reckon... because Mitchell is such a snipey nine, I'm going to go Finn Smith will do a lot of kicking, surprisingly.
He's third most kickiest.
well done.
So, yeah, good. Now, he kicks 3 out of 5, roughly, rounding slightly. So, every 5 balls he gets, he kicks 3 of them, passes 2 of them.
So, Faz kicks the most?
Faz is middle of the road.
Is he?
Faz is 1-1. For every one he passes, he kicks one.
Put us out of our misery, then. What's going on?
So... I'll tell you the one that's not surprising. Marcus Smith is the second most passiest fly half.
Passiest.
So he passes 2 for every one that he kicks. The kickiest is Finn Russell.
Wow.
Finn Russell kicks 3 for every one that he passes.
Wow.
Now, there is probably a few things on that. Bath play a tight forward game, so they probably play a lot of passes off 9 with their forwards being tight. and Finn Russell uses a kick pass as well. Like, and his range of kicking, yeah. Both distance, but crossfield kick and grubber kicks and all the rest of it. But I just found it really interesting.
That is.
Marcus Smith and Sheedy being the passiest, very understandable. Ford and Faz being down the middle, roughly 50-50, is understandable. Pollard being the second kickiest, understandable. Finn Russell being the kickiest is a bit surprising.
Who is the Gloucester starting playoff according to this?
So they've chosen Barton.
Hastings has only just come back to fitness.
Hastings,
have you seen the news today?
And Charlie Atkinson will be their 10 moving forward.
Yeah, I've seen that.
I mean, Adam Hastings isn't... Well,
no, Adam Hastings is great.
No, he's great, but he knows he's surplus to requirements then, doesn't he, surely?
Well,
what's going on? Is this Leicester need... they're above
jettison
the
salary cap.
They need to get rid of someone quickly.
I don't think it is, actually. I think Leicester have got themselves so many options at fly half now. So, obviously, Pollard is the boy. Mm, now, you look beneath Pollard, and you've got a load of lads competing. So, you need a solid backup. Shilcock is that. So, now you've got your backup done, and you've got your starter. What is next? Well, two guys to develop.
And Charlie Atkinson, if you can imagine, if you're him going, I thought I was going to kick on here, and...
He's not.
And I can look, I'm just watching... Finn Smith down the road taking my spot.
Yeah, so they've got Charlie Atkinson, but they've also got Kieran Wilkinson. So those two boys, both of them are really talented. But the question sort of remains, do they have what it takes to be a Premiership fly half? And it's more than being talented. You know, it's about showing up every day and watching film and, you know, doing all of the really hard stuff. So Shilcock, being a seasoned professional, no problem. They've got two lads on their books who are really talented. If Gloucester wants one of them and they want to pay some money, for instance, why not send him away? You know, what can you do? And Gloucester do need a backup.
They do. And I said the other day that Charlie Atkinson, one of the few games he's played was when he ended up being third choice fullback. So he's kind of like third, fourth choice fly half and third choice fullback, which is, if he has aspirations, which he should do because he's a talented player, he's just not going to get the game time.
He needs to be more
Leicester.
Than talented. That's the, whoever's managing his career, agent-wise, needs to tell him you need to be more than talented, or this will be it. He'll just be a bit part player wherever he goes.
Whatever he wants to do, he's got to play, and he's just not getting that at Leicester.
On Gloucester, who's excited for Atkinson and the Atkinson background?
I know. Actually, we've got a message just on Gloucester now you mention it. Friend of the pod, Ed Moraine, got in touch, sent me a message this morning at, 5:51 a.m.
Is he abroad somewhere?
Is he going to CrossFit?
No.
In Dubai?
That's incredible. I mean, all I said is, he said, I was at the Gloucester game. Do you want me to ping you a couple of thoughts?
Yes.
So, absolutely, we're going to be doing our pod about 10:30. He said, I'll be with you before there. It was before there, 5:51 a.m. No, he edited it at 5:51 a.m. So he sent it to me before that. Anyway, I hope everything's okay.
His secretary must be working late.
He said, right. He said the caveats here are he's a Gloucester fan, so you're getting this from a Gloucester one-eyed view. And two, he's done zero post-match research. He said, that's your job. So I'll leave that to JB. And you've got Ultimate Rugby on hand, haven't you?
I have.
He said Northampton were ultimately... utterly dominant in the opening minutes. You remember seeing the clock at 22 minutes and they just trundled them all over for try number 3. All of their opening tries were from tight play through the forwards, which after our pack's dominance against Claremont last week was really disappointing to see. Yeah, and I'm sure there are Gloucester fans going, I'm pleased about Charlie Atkinson, but maybe if we've got money to spend, please spend it in the pack.
Yeah.
Where that's where their biggest deficiencies are.
And they've got some good players in the pack, but they've not got the full complement. They can't put out a full 8 or even a full 12, 13 players in the 23.
And again,
you can all front up.
Val Rapava-Rusking is injured again. He could be so good. He said Gloucester clawed their way back into the half with a couple of tries from Clark and Harris, largely due to finally establishing themselves with a set piece. He said, blah, blah, blah. I'd love to say more about the scrum, but anyway, halftime 14-24 to Northampton. He said, Oh, no. They said, despite our dominance in the scrum, multiple scrum penalties, which is a good sign, Skivington made the bizarre call to replace our tight head and hooker at half-time and brought on Jamal Ford-Robinson. I mean, great guy.
Good move.
Yeah. And one of the top try scorers for Gloucester this season, I think.
Not really seeing anything wrong so far.
Brought him on. Despite paying the price for this, we lost dominance in the scrum while the new front row found their feet. He said he put Jamal Ford-Robinson on at loose head.
Yeah, he goes both sides.
Mm. Okay. But he's better at tight head.
Depends who's up against, I guess.
Yeah. He said the first line-out throw was given as not straight, the very first one of the game. Gloucester utilised the extra man, dominate up front and pulled the game back. Pre-game, my stepdad and I were discussing what to me was the frustrating call to play Santiago Carreras at fullback and play Hastings at 10, his first game back after 7 months out. I'm not sure how Santi feels about losing the hot seat, but he certainly demonstrated how beautifully he operates in the standoff position with his try under the post to take Gloucester ahead. It was a real seesaw of dominance, the two packs throughout the game, and I think Gloucester's consistent set-piece dominance gave them the edge. However, our backs lacked any invention or direction. Far too much kicking and relentless sideways running. And LRZ... Oh, sorry. I'm being terrible at reading this. Anyway, he said, ultimately, Hastings couldn't quite send the penalty over for the win. We should have nudged... Maybe we should have nudged for the corner and gone again. Perhaps playing for a penalty 10 to 15 metres closer, but hindsight is always 20-20. A frustrating day to be a Gloucester fan. Two bonus points, though, in a game I expected us to get nothing. All this said, it was a festive family day out of King's Home, and you can't complain at 9 tries.
No. I would say this. They are in a habit of losing.
So is that 7 on the bounce? So they won the first 2 games, lost...
In the Prem, yeah.
In the Prem, yes. Lost the next 7 in the Prem.
Yeah, difficult for Gloucester. Gloucester go through phases, though. I wouldn't be too downhearted because, A, there's no relegation.
Yeah.
But, B, Gloucester do this. They went through a phase when Skivington first arrived of not being able to lose, winning really tight games. They are a good team. They're a good team. And they just sometimes go a little bit astray. I can't put my finger on why.
And I obviously, this wasn't the televised game. I didn't really see it. So... It's hard to know, but Northampton are a very good team. It's a very strong Northampton team, and so Gloucester will be disappointed to lose, especially when they have the shot to win it, but it's not the worst thing in the world to lose to this Gloucester team.
Yeah, Northampton are
Northampton
are a team which I think are very similar to Gloucester, but they're just in different cycles. Like, Northampton have forgotten how to lose, Gloucester have forgotten how to win, and you just look at the score, and that's exactly what's happened. Exactly what's happened. Northampton, oh, by the way, let me just make a big call, something which no one else has said. I'm going to say it now. Why are we not talking about Curtis Langdon for England? He's come into this squad which does not scrimmage well. They've now started to scrimmage well, and he is scoring tries, and he's carrying like an absolute beast. He's a big enough lad. Why does nobody talk about this guy for anything else other than a starting spot?
Well, in terms of hookers, I actually think when you look down the Premiership, it seems like a position of weakness, but England have got some good talent there. I'm just going down the table. Tom Dunn, I suppose you could class
Tom Dunn's very good.
Very good. Very good.
Not playing as well as Langdon.
Luke Cowan-Dickie.
Not playing as well as Langdon.
Langdon.
Luke Cowan-Dickie, we know he's a great player, but he's not playing well at the
Dan
moment.
Frost is doing well at Exeter.
Dan Frost is doing well.
Yeah.
Theo Dan and Jamie George at Saracens.
Yeah, both excellent.
Jack Walker at Quinns. Harry Thacker at Bristol, I still really like. He's so good.
My concern with Thacker, he is so good. My concern is he's size, just not quite big enough for international scrimmaging.
And Leicester, well, obviously Montage is their main boy there.
Yeah, although Dolly's back and fit.
No, Dolly's not back. He's just had surgery on something, I think.
Oh, has he? Oh, God.
Literally, he's been training well. And then
Charlie Clare's the other.
Oh, God.
Not Charlie Clare, there's another guy, isn't there, who I really like.
Oh, yeah, the guy who got the hat trick last week.
Yeah, what's his name?
Not Alex. It might be Alex. I can't remember.
It's a funny surname. It'll come out to us. Him. I like him. I like Charlie Clare too.
Gloucester, take your pick, McGuigan.
But he is, I'm sure he is.
And Blamire at Newcastle. So England have got good options.
Yeah, but he is the form hooker. And he's been...
Archie Vaines,
that's it.
So he's been doing well. Even when I watched him at Sale, and he's coming on for Akka van der Merwe, I thought he was adding something to
the
game.
Is he not about the same size as Thacker, though? If we're talking.
No, he's much bigger. He's about 6'4", 6'1".
Langdon.
Yeah.
He's don't know.
Proper decent. And he scored a great try this weekend. I think it was him, at least. It better be him. He had a scrum hat on.
He scored two tries this weekend.
Did he?
Yeah.
Get him in.
There you go.
Get the kids in.
Yeah.
That's what I always say.
He's been around too. I think he's Newcastle, London Irish, South.
God, he has been around. Wow.
Went to Worcester, went bankrupt, went to Montpellier. So came straight back to Northampton.
His list of teams on Wikipedia, to take with a pinch of salt. London Irish.
Yep.
Loaned to Henley Hawks. Yep. Sale Sharks, 89 appearances for Sale, where he went on loan in his time at Sale to Mac Doncaster Fylde. He then went to Worcester for a handful of games. He then went to Montpellier, and now he's at Northampton Saints.
Sure, he's been to Newcastle as well. Certain about it.
It's not listed on here, but that doesn't mean it's not correct, because this is Wikipedia.
Yeah, and how old are you now?
26.
I tell you now, that is the boy. Give him a go.
The flip side, as good as he is in the Premiership, I guess this is the context when you're comparing within the Premiership. You then open it out and go, what's his name? Cody Taylor, Taki Aho, Malcolm Marks, Montoya.
I mean, they're good, aren't they?
You sort of go, it is not, we're not, none of England's hookers are at that level. Dan or Sheehan.
Bongyum Benambi. The French.
Kelleher. Oh, yeah, the French.
French
ones.
Having Marchand and Bouguereau.
I mean, you think about these boys, actually, and what stands out at every name you just mentioned is the sheer brute physicality of them.
Yeah.
And I can't put my hand on my heart and say, yeah, the only hooker in England that matches that description is it when he's at his best, and he's not, would be Luke Cameron-Dickie.
Yes.
And he's not at his best.
Yeah. Jamie George is a different type of player. Jamie George is an excellent player, but he doesn't match like the Cody Taylor, the Malcolm Marks, the Marchand, the Bouguereau, the physicality that those boys can offer. Jamie George doesn't.
Malvaka,
yeah.
What
I love him.
Sheehan.
I love him.
Dan Sheehan's superb.
I think Malvaka's probably the best. Well, is he best lot? In my heart, he is.
France have got the trio. The trio of hookers that France have.
Triumvirate.
Yeah.
Do you like Alex Sanderson's Sith Lord impression?
I've seen
this. Sale DLR.
He's tried everything, hasn't he? Now, at this point, he's now tried everything. So, first of all, congratulations to Sale. I think this is a really, really important win. A really important win. But it wasn't easy. And looking at Saracens, they are just the Jenga piece, or the Jenga jigsaw, which you just remove pieces from and it doesn't fall over. I don't know how they play so well with so many. You know, it just seems to be they manage to replace lads all of the time. In a similar kind of way to Exeter.
Except prop. They lost the game lost the game for Saracens, that was it.
Well, yes. Or you can look at it another way, because we've not spoken about this lad for a long time, and I've always rated him. Ross Harrison.
He battered Alex Clary.
So yeah. I didn't even think that was the impressive part.
And then Mulapola.
And he played 80 minutes as well.
Yeah.
But he used to always play 80
minutes. He used to for a long
play 80
time.
Minutes, right?
Yeah.
So he has been good since age 19, basically, for Sale. He's been really up.
I played with him when he was 18. He played, yeah. Played essentially for a season, yeah.
He's absolutely class. Yeah. What impressed me about...
The lead.
Sorry.
There you go.
What impressed me about Ross Harrison, he started the game, he's about a 7 out of 10. And then he finished the game at 7 out of 10, which is basically 10 out of 10 performance.
Yeah.
You do the maths on that. But he's brilliant. Like, he works so hard. He's always in the middle of stuff. He's intervening. And to get the upper hand in the scrimmage as well, which he used to do a lot anyway.
Yeah, he's got over 300 appearances for Sale Sharks.
And he's hardly played the last 2 years. Like, he is such a valuable player. And I was delighted to see him starting. And in the back of my mind, I was thinking, oh, this isn't going to go well. Because, you know, when you're not seeing a player for a while, you think, there's a reason for that. Well, there isn't a reason for this. I don't know why they haven't made more. So Diamond was saying before he left that, yeah, it's great, now we can rotate Ross Harrison. But actually what happened is they just got rid of him completely.
He just played very little.
Yeah. So I think he's miles ahead of, not miles ahead, because they've got Bevan Rod, who is completely unique as a loose head.
Yeah, is he injured at the moment?
Must be. But he's completely. But then you've got
Simon McIntyre.
Simon McIntyre.
On Asanya and Opoku Fajor.
Yeah.
They're all
Opoku Fajor, who apparently can play. I've only seen him play tight head, but apparently can play both sides. And he's not. Like, he's a big boy, but he's not that big for a. Certainly, like, he's being talked up to be an England international.
Clearly a technician.
Yes.
or just incredibly strong and compact?
I think both, yeah. Technically very good
he
for someone so young.
Ruined Tom West.
But I was
very
watching, strong. You know, Tom West is no mug.
He's an experienced Premiership player.
And I was watching these scrums, it wasn't clear to me they were all penalties. It was like the Sale got up early in the game, and then after that they kind of had just the rub of the green because it was perceived that they were dominant.
Twas ever thus.
Being dominant and showing a picture that shows you're dominant, that the outcome's the same.
It is the same, isn't it? It's the same. You're right. You're absolutely right. It's the same thing. Yeah, so they did great. And it's important because I was watching this game and Saracens just refused to die. Like, why won't they die? And they won't. They won't they just give won't. Up.
Yeah, yeah.
They're a nightmare. I thought they were going to beat Sale. I thought they were convinced it was over.
After that, was it Van Zyl?
Yes.
Interception just before half time. And you're like, Saracens are going to win this. They're like, when it got late in the game, when it's a 2-point game, you're like, they're going to do something similar. They're going to just sneak this from. They'll find a way to win.
They did play a bit of crazy rugby though in Sale's half with minutes going down and just shipping rubbish balls. Yeah. Nick Tompkins throwing the ball back 20 meters.
Well, I mean, and there's the other factor in this. I mean, I don't know how I describe this, but maybe there is Rob Dupree and then there's Robert Dupree. One of them's really good and one of them's really bad. Now, the really bad, Rob Dupree is really bad, Robert Dupree is really good. Rob Dupree showed up this game. There's no two ways about it. Throwing things into touch, missing tackles. It was just not an impressive performance.
It wasn't really a day for the backs, though, was it? It was
no, because they kept on throwing intercepts.
It was so windy, so blustery. Like, some of the kicks, I've never seen a game where so many kicks, like bombs, just were not taken. Just they either bounced or players jumped in the air and got a fingertip to it and didn't take it cleanly. It's horrible conditions to play in.
One of the best substitutions of the game was Sam Bedloe coming on for Manning. It was a enforced substitution as soon as Bedloe comes on, Sale score. Mm. By the way, AJ Bell, packed. A few people that I spoke to were like, that's the best atmosphere that we've seen there for a long time, which is awesome.
I was in the same fixture last season, which was March or April of this year, and it was a sellout again then, and it was a really good day, great atmosphere then. And this looked from TV.
Did it?
Looked great.
Did anyone feel a little bit sad watching Manu versus Billy? Two declining forces.
Billy and Mako, when the scrum was getting pumped, I kind of feel like they've had their day. And I mentioned this last week about the difference between Saracens and Exeter, and Rob Baxter just cleared house. Cleared house, kept two or three guys. Whereas Saracens, they are trying to hold on to guys. And some of the boys, like Goode, is still performing well. Mm-hmm. Maitland's 35.
He's 35?
Yeah.
Goodness me.
He's still a very solid, good performing Premiership winger. Other guys maybe are not quite there. Like Billy and Mako are not performing at the level
It's a horrible thing for Saracens because many of their good memories are formed around both those players.
Yeah.
It's time to move on.
They've been such good, and they will still be on big money. There will be a lot of salary cap tied up in those two.
The Saracens, Saracens family ethos is going to get really tested because at some point you've got to say goodbye.
Yes.
And I think it's time. Same with Manu. When the commentating team said, Alex Anderson thinks he's got two more years left at this level. So there are a few people in my life who care about me dearly who occasionally say to me, no, stop. And this is what I want to say to Alex Anderson when he starts talking about Manu. Two more years left. No, no, no. Like, you've got other boys, throw them in. It is time to move on.
That's what Gillette should be doing their advert about. No, that's not okay.
Not cool, bro.
Yeah, with loads of adoring DORs looking at past it stars.
Manu, you could be so good. Like, look at the hit on
hitting the staff. Oh, come out.
Are we in?
Yes.
Sorry, I keep touching my microphone.
That's all right.
Look at how you get these little glimpses of Manu where you think, oh, he's back to his best, but he's just not.
He's not, and he's not going to be. It's over. If you want to see Manu at his best, go watch Bath. Go and watch Ollie Lawrence.
Yeah.
But who plays 12 for England?
Max Adjomo.
He's actually a 12.
He's actually a 12. He's a bloody good 12. Tell you what you would do now for Cam Redpath to be an England player.
Yeah.
Or Tompkins.
Tompkins or Redpath would be, yeah.
I do know Atkinson from Gloucester. Just give him a go.
Big Seb.
Big Seb Atkinson, or your boy from Leicester whose name always escapes
Dan Kelly. Although he's being played at 13.
He has, yeah.
I like Porter. I've always liked Porter.
Kelly, I like Kelly. I've not seen it from him this season.
No. I don't think his last injury.
Yeah, I don't think he's playing particularly well at the moment.
Yeah,
Porter. I assume Porter's injured because he's not playing. Yeah, it's a tough one.
Mm. Someone wanted to talk about.
Has anyone seen the Vakatawa try for Bristol?
That's a nice story with what he's gone through and now being back playing rugby and scoring.
And looking ace.
Looking ace.
Well, I've not seen the try. Has anyone seen it?
It's a hell of a try.
Is it?
Handoff, accelerate,
explain
beat
to me,
defender.
Like, how far out?
About 40.
Yeah.
Several defenders beaten.
It's the power of the first handoff and then the acceleration.
Yeah, it's one of those handoffs where it's like he's just hit a boost button on Mario Kart or something.
Bam!
Just bam, yeah. Push off and accelerate at the same
good
time.
Good night. It is a great story because the reason he retired is because the French medical procedures are so strict. So it has been a risk to get him over here.
Mm. Yeah.
Christ, if he's playing that well, why? It seems very unfair, doesn't it, that if he wants to take that risk and he's playing so well, he has to give it. He looks like an international. Why can't he play international? I mean, who's...
Well, he can't play international for France, but if he's not played for them for 3 years, he can play internationally for Fiji.
True. There again, why... France have got no rules about playing overseas.
They don't, but it might be to do with their... Because my understanding was it was a medical-driven insurance problem.
That's right.
So he couldn't be insured.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Have any rules about playing abroad? It's just because French players don't play abroad.
Yeah, if you're getting paid hundreds of thousands of pounds a year, why would you move?
Yeah.
Why would you move to an English-speaking nation
there are
for
14,
half the money?
14, well, about 30 amazing clubs to choose from in France.
Yeah, so that rule is kind of superfluous. Yeah. But in a way, it works for them because they keep all the best players because the money's right. But when you have an injury risk and someone who needs to rediscover himself like Vakatawa, well, there you go. Go pick him. Although he has got to be better than Gael Ficou, and that isn't necessarily easy.
Yeah, Ficou and Donty.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Yeah.
They're the starting ones, but he might be better than Moefana.
I think he is better than Moefana, even though Moefana plays for my beloved Bordeaux.
Or what's the lad, the other guy that... Clement? No.
There's the young... Vincent.
Vincent, that's the one.
Yeah.
And then there's Gaëtan, who's legit coming through.
I mean, you know, it turns out France probably don't need him, but I'd love to see him force his way through.
Fiji.
Would just be a nice story, wouldn't it?
It would be good. It's already a nice story.
Can I tell you something which is really bugging me about Premiership Rugby this week?
Go on.
And it's something which everyone will think, oh, that's innocuous. Why is JV getting wound up about this? But I am getting wound up about it. The amount of DORs that want to lecture you about what your home life should be like. So, Saracens did it. Alex Anderson did it. Someone else did, like, yeah, we're just going to switch off and spend time with our families now. Like, it's a family Christmas. We're just going to all go away and have a break from rugby. It's like, what if you don't have a family? Like, why do I have to be lectured by the DORs? Like, oh yeah, you've all got to go to your families now and enjoy your family time because we're really good family men. Stop it. If you want to go and spend time with your family, go and do it on your own time and don't mention it to me.
So here's an alternative, right? So ask me, I'm Alex Anderson. Ask me what's happening over the next week.
What's happening over the next week?
Well, you know, it's... he's not. That's Steve Diamond.
same.
All right, I'll do it as Steve Diamond. Well, you know, it's a family time of year, so I'm going to go back. I'm going to spend some time with the family. Some of the lads, though, are going to be swiping right on Tinder for the next week.
Well, this is exactly right. You know, why do we all have to have, like, the most wholesome... Yeah, that's what they're basically saying. We're going to spend 5 days being utterly wholesome, and then we're going to come back. Like, shut up.
Some of the boys are going to be partying in the Manchester Metropolitan Students Union Student Halls of Residence.
I absolutely hate it. I hate it so much.
I've just seen an email here. Contact tedchasers at gmail.com. One of the things, in fact, you know this about me. What's one of the things I associate most with the festive period?
Ooh, the Winter Olympics Athletes Village.
Oh, no. Of course, I know exactly what this is. Die Hard. No, it is Strongman.
World's Strongest Man.
Oh, yes.
Me and my brother and my dad would watch World's Strongest Man.
Has it started yet?
It has started. Oh, I didn't realise.
Right.
But we got an email from Graham Smith, who's... He's just reminded me about World's Strongest Man. I need to get recorded. So, spoiler alert for the first episode. He says, just watching World's Strongest Man, a bloke who came last just did the hacker to wow the crowd.
Oh, I've heard about this.
WTF. If Steve from the Midlands came last, he wouldn't be paraded like that, nor would he take it. All Kiwis I know would be embarrassed by that.
No, it's special and cultural.
Well, he's done well. I suppose he's had to qualify to get there.
Hey, if you're even in the World's Strongest Man, you get
in the conversation for World's Strongest Man.
If you're even talking about me as a potential top 10, top 50.
Yeah, but this will be the qualifying heats. But that means he's one of the strongest five in his region.
If I'm top five in my level 7 rugby club, I am delighted.
But you are legitimately the strongest in your box. So
five rep squat, Tim. Do I know it?
Five rep squat. I think I know the answer to that. I think
185. More than
what?
185 this week.
That's ridiculous.
That's okay. It's reasonable. That's
good. And again...
There's more to go. I'm going to do 190.
I was going to say, I see people putting weight like that on in like a regular gym. CrossFit gyms actually have standards, I have to say. Mm. The movement standards, it's functional and good weight on it. But you see people in like your Pure gym or whatever who will put that much weight on, grunt and make loads of noise so people look at them, and then they'll do about 45 degree.
Oh, believe me.
Not even, move the bar.
I want the attention.
My breath, whenever I watch people do it, and they do their five reps, I go, zero.
No rep.
Zero.
Zero.
Oh, I love a good zero.
Zero.
My favourite lift is the front squat. I love to do a front squat in a commercial gym right to the bottom. Right to the bottom, sit there, maybe a few seconds, make sure everyone's watching, and then stand up.
Very good. Have we talked about all the games?
Pretty much. I mean,
there's a few more things I'd like to talk about. So we didn't say anything about Harlequins, and we didn't speak about England's potential number 8.
Yes.
Alfie Barbary. And now I know we spoke about him a bit last week, and he's a constant source of, a constant topic on this podcast. But after this week, I thought he was impressive again. Do you think he's made enough of an impact to be the England number 8?
So I think, so this was obviously a battle of the potential number 8s, Barbary against Dom Brandt, and with the number of injured players and players who were unavailable, so no Ludlam, no Curry.
Earl is going to be back for the Six Nations,
okay.
I think. So I think Earl at the moment.
Well, we hope so.
But Billy, there's no chance, as we discussed before, or there should be no chance. There shouldn't really have been any chance of him playing in the World Cup semi-final.
Zach Mercer is the one that we were imagining was going to have the kind of impact that Barbary is now.
Is that Mercer who plays for Bath, yeah?
According to Stephen Jones.
Yeah. I read that
in the Times.
Good God, Stephen. It's quite a good article, actually. I was reading it. I was like,
it was an okay article. He didn't mention it. So it was Stephen Jones talking about potential England players, new faces, and he kept referring to Bath's Zach Mercer, which is, you know, 3 years ago, he did play for Bath, to be fair to him.
Yep, no, but he's reinvented his game at Bath, that's right. Yeah. Yeah. When you make a comment about what he's doing at Bath.
But he didn't mention Tommy Freeman.
Did he?
And there was a few other players like that. There were, like, obvious ones that would mention.
He mentioned Harry Thacker, right? And you mentioned Harry Thacker. But I don't think you'd describe him as young Harry Thacker anymore,
no,
would you?
No, you wouldn't.
Like, it's not a young gun.
No.
There was another one on there who just wasn't young enough to be described as one of England's young...
How old is Harry? Harry Thacker's about 28. He's 29, Harry Thacker.
Yeah, he's really getting on, though.
So he's got a good few years left in him as a front
runner. Yeah, but you wouldn't say...
He's not young.
Like, exactly.
29, in rugby terms, you are over middle-aged in terms of rugby age.
I think with the context of all of the injuries, he would be definitely in the wider training squad, and he's pushing.
So let's just have a look at the people that he's... Atkinson, yep, down with that. Thacker, not young enough. This is an interesting one, and I know where I stand. It's a no, but I'll throw him out there. Miles Reid.
He did, but also in that article, he didn't mention Finn Smith. He mentioned Charlie Atkinson, but he does not mention Finn Smith.
It's wild, that,
which
isn't
is
it?
Interesting.
Which is like, I'm yeah. like, are you really watching the Prem?
Miles Reed is.
Yeah, are you watching? Are you actually paying attention to what's happening? He does mention Ollie Hartley's in there after one game because Ollie Hartley was not that impressive against Sale Sharks.
Well, no backs were.
He loves Saracens, doesn't he?
He does.
Nothing wrong with that, but he does. He loves Saracens, where he will mention Ollie Hartley, who it looks promising, but he'll mention Ollie Hartley, but won't mention Tommy Freeman or Finn Smith.
Yeah, yeah. That's interesting. I always remember his Saracen salary cap breach pod before the report came out, where he was nearly crying on the podcast defending Saracen, defending what turned out to be literally the indefensible.
So let's talk about so we're going to go on to Barbary. What about Miles Reed? Do you think Miles Reed's got a chance of it?
I think he could be in the squad. I don't think he will be, but I think he could be in the conversation.
Ben Earl, we're expecting to be fit. That's one spot. George Martin and Ollie Chesson will be kind of your hybrid six.
Take the old Cordial Laws.
So that'll be a second. If you take one of those as a second spot, you'll have Sam Underhill. That'll be three.
Yeah.
But Sam Underhill didn't play this week. Is he fit?
He's been fit, so I don't know.
I mean, if he's fit, firing Sam Underhill is in.
Yeah.
But if he's not in, and you can never guarantee he's going
to
be in.
So that's kind of three, and I can't think of anyone else that you sort of go, oh, they have to be in. Ludlam.
I've not seen him for a little while.
Yeah, he's not been fit, has he?
I'll give you one, right, which you'll think I'm mental for mentioning, is a Harlequin. Not the one you think I'm going to say. Not Don Brandt, not Chandler.
Not Kenningham.
Not Will Evans. I keep calling him Chisholm. I think he could play for England. I really think he could play for England. I think he bangs hard. He gets over the gain line. He can play across all three back row positions. I'm not saying he's a nailed on starter, but I'd give him a go.
So I think he is, and I said this to you when we were on our run, I think he is like a Jackson Ray type player.
Yes, I agree with that.
Very, very useful to have
Jackson,
the club.
He's
just not quite good enough in any dimension. He's phenomenally useful.
And who does Jackson Ray remind you of historically? This is a good comparison in my mind.
Go on.
Martin Corey. So Martin Corey could play.
Martin Corey could slot in at lock. He was more
So I think Jackson Ray could probably.
No, he's not that.
I bet Jackson Ray has played lock for Saracens.
No, he's not that.
He might have packed down there, but he's not that.
Martin Corey's primarily
6'5". Jackson Ray's maybe 6'1", 2".
Is he? I think he's bigger than that.
No, maybe. I've stood next to him when he gave me a boot. And then you gave those boots away.
I did. So the only other player I know was size 14 feet.
12.
No, they were bigger than that, weren't they?
No, they were size 12.
Yeah, Jackson Ray's listed at 6'2".
Oh, there you go.
So maybe not
Martin Corey size, but still.
Yeah.
That's kind of...
No, so I think... So you've got those three that are kind of nailed on. I think Ludlam, if fit, will be in and around. I think it's the number eight position. I think Ben Curry will feel hard done by if he's not in the mix.
Well, on Miles Reed, I don't think he's physical enough. But do you see one of the turnovers that he got? It was so good.
And he's got a great engine. Very athletic. Just he's a line-out option. But yeah, he's not going off mass. Yeah.
But it is the number eight position that England need depth in.
Yeah.
And Ben Earl's emerged as the number one, but Barbary, Mercer.
Of the players who are fit and playing in the Premiership this season, Barbary, if you could only pick someone based on Premiership form, Barbary would be the number one shout.
Yes,
so who are the two that we discussed who are not fit? Tom Willis.
Correct.
Not fit, but maybe could do something for England. And there's another one, wasn't there?
Mercer, who's just back fit.
And of course, everyone is talking about, as we were, Chandler Cunningham South, but I just have not seen enough good moments from him yet.
So, Cunningham South, for me, he's 2 or 3 years off. He's got the potential, I think but he's not there yet.
Greg Fisselau is on track. Yeah. He's on track, but not there yet.
I would agree with that as well. But both of those,
I really liked, and I've not seen him for ages, was the eight who played for Exeter for about 3 games, and I've not seen him since. I can't remember his name now. Tall lad, very fast.
The slim, yeah.
Tuima that they've moved into.
No, he was an English lad. He's been there 2 or 3 years now.
I know who you mean.
Yeah.
He's been tall, injured. Yeah.
Hold on. Yeah, he played open side a lot. They played him like the
Richard,
capstick.
Capstick. Yeah, where is he? I really
he
like
must
him.
Be injured. Must be.
Probably being paid 40k a year for the last 3 years. He'll come back.
He was ace before he got injured.
He was good.
Really good.
So.
Yeah, cool. I reckon we should. I've got to mention this. Matt Cotton, Times writer, speaking about, one person who always gets his facts on the money and is always on the pulse is Matthew Cotton with his... Usually on a Thursday or a Friday, you'll be able to read his weekend preview. And he says, he's emailed contactedchases@gmail.com and says, love the pod, not my wife, blah. That's a new one. I like that. That's demonstration that you're a long time listener. He says, just to bring your attention that this weekend in the Gloucester v Northampton game, he's talking in the future tense, but now we had what can only be described as the World Cup final of rugby social media handles. It's Ethan Waller versus Mark Atkinson, a.k.a. Beef 324 versus Sausage Legs 10.
Well, of course, it's not Sausage Legs 10 anymore.
No, he changed it. I'm devastated he changed it. But anyway, he says, I hope the three of you have a wonderful and safe festive period and that JB gets as much time away from his family as possible.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks for another great year of podding. Let the email end.
Yeah. Well, actually, talking of time away from my family, I'm taking all my family around to your house, Tim.
Oh, they're all coming round. Oh, brilliant.
They're all coming round.
Fantastic.
En masse.
Fantastic.
And we've got some beers.
I might bring the kids round for an hour.
Oh, nice.
Or two.
Yeah, we just said open house. It's something that I remember my parents doing on Christmas Eve.
We used to do something like this on Boxing Day.
But you've always got that slight panic that hardly anyone will turn up. So we've invited so many people.
That's what to do.
It could be carnage, but I'm sure it'll be fun. It'll be lovely. Yeah, great. Brilliant. Mm. Well, we can continue the rugby chat there.
So, our listener Phil has dropped off some whiskey for us.
Oh, wow.
Dropped off a crate of bottled ale, a crate of canned ale. So, I'll be bringing it.
Oh, incredible. Outstanding. Oh, is it the guys from Wheatwood?
It is Wheatwood.
Yeah. It is.
So, it's a Cheshire, it's an English single malt whiskey.
It is.
I saw upstairs.
I mean, what's the time now?
We are still before midday.
What is the time now?
11 minutes to 12.
Why don't I bring the whiskey down and we'll do a whiskey tasting just before we go?
Let's do it on the Patreon pod.
Well, no, because everyone wants to know what Wheatworth whiskey's like.
Wheatwood Ales and Distillery. Phil McLaughlin.
So yeah. Bring the bottle down. Let's have a quick look at it.
Bring the single malt whiskey down. Tell you what, very quickly though, do that after we've just had a very brief chat about the disaster that is Bill Sweeney.
Oh, yes, please. Oh, God. Here we go.
So to summarise, the professional game... I can never remember. PGP, is it? Or PGA? Professional Game Agreement.
Yeah, but it also gets called something else. It's sometimes PGP or PGB. Well, anyway.
Whatever it is, the agreement for English domestic rugby moving forward is reaching, it appears, the crucial and maybe final stage where the Premiership directors of rugby and chairman and owners and everyone met in London this week to discuss it. They seem fairly happy with where it's going, involving 25 centrally contracted players where the RFU pays. So 25 times 150k. Can't do quick maths like that, Phil can. That's like 3.75 million pounds.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
If you say so, 25 times 150k.
2.5 million.
Oh, God.
And then 50k times 25. Anyway, I think it's... Anyway, a lot of money from the RFU coffers is being spent on English rugby players already playing in the Premiership. And meanwhile, Bill Sweeney has just said the most incendiary comments that have really ruffled the feathers of Championship clubs whose owners have poured a lot of money in over the years. And that shouldn't be forgotten, because at the same time that they've been doing that to keep the game... below the Premiership afloat, the RFU have, and this is the bit that really made my piss boil when I read Bill Sweeney's comments, he completely ignores the fact that the RFU funding for the Championship went from £650,000 to £150,000.
Yes. And we got rid of that funding to fund the women's game. It is almost an identical amount which went to the women's game, which got taken away from the Championship. Never forget that. The Championship was sacrificed at the altar of a cult. So
and so now, surprise, surprise, you take £500,000 per club away per year and some clubs struggle because the owners take that weight up. And then Bill Sweeney says, oh, yeah, the Championship doesn't deliver.
No, he said something worse. Is that they've had unsuccessful results in that way.
Yeah, he said, he described the RFUF as having poured money into the Championship. And it was like, no, you've extracted seven-odd million pounds per year.
I'm so mixed on this because the RFU's money is derived almost exclusively from the product of club players. So if the Premiership was not producing the club players, the international players, there would be no product for England. Like, zero. And I think the Premiership owners have got a real good argument when they turn around and they'll say openly, we need more money from the RFU. And the reason we want more money from the RFU is because without their input, nothing happens.
Oh, no, I agree with that. But you know, the Premiership clubs also have funded academies, which the Championship clubs don't.
Yeah, but that funding comes from the RFU, and the RFU's money is purely derived from the services provided by the clubs. So, yeah, it's like I'm taking money from your assets, and then I'm giving you something back. And then, are you not grateful for this? No, I'm not grateful for this because everything that you have generated has come from my assets. Yeah. So, and I do see where there's a problem here, and you know, the RFU keep sticking their nose into things where it doesn't really belong, because what are they? Are they a guardian of the grassroots game? Are they a governing body? Or are they a professional rugby team? They don't know themselves because they're too incompetent to really work it out. And then on top of that, they change direction on a political whim. So you said extraction of money. That's not a problem per se if they did it gradually by 5% every single year for 20 years. But they just decided to flip a coin and went, oh, okay, well, women's game needs money. Sorry, Championship, you're all out. You're not trendy now.
And bearing in mind that all of the money, as you rightly pointed out, from rugby, I mean, there's bottom-up money from member clubs, etc. But the top-down money from the national team funding basically everything is... the Championship have a significant role to play there with... I mean, we could be here till New Year's Eve listing players that have played at Championship clubs before then pulling on an England jersey. And it's a vital... I think it's a vital part of the pathway.
Sorry, go on, Phil.
Well, I was going to say the Championship put out a statement, the clubs together put out a statement, and they say in the last... They don't actually say the timescale, but they say part of the Championship there's been more than 100 internationally recognised players who've come through the Championship, which has been running for the last 12, 13 seasons. So from that, you can see you'd have to list the 100-plus players who've taken that route.
Yeah, and in terms of like efficiency here, I think the Premiership, we talked about what a great product it is. I think one of the stories that doesn't get told about the Premiership, it is an unbelievably inefficient place of huge waste and dearth of talent that just gets binned, because you have so many great lads with potential aged 18, 19, just sat in academies playing no meaningful, high-quality rugby, never playing first-team rugby, and then leaving the sport.
Okay, so this is exactly why we need loads of changes in the Premiership, like the minimum wage, so you can't do this. You're not going to keep a lad if you've got to pay him 80K. You've got to get rid of him, right? So you've got that. You've also got to remember that there is the way I look at it, like this unholy, to use Michael Owen's phrase, like an unholy union. And it's sort of like this circular thing of the RFU, the Premiership clubs, the private schools. Because if you get that circle, that's where all the players come from. So do they get developed by the private schools, then they get developed by the clubs, and they get fed into England? Then England will say, well, we actually provide the funding for the academies, which they kind of do and they kind of don't. Yeah. But that's the thing. And then if you look at everything below that, like the community game, that's where they generate their fan base. So they don't really care about us in terms of, you know, we're not going to get players from there. We'll get some players. If we do, phenomenal. But that's not really why you're there. You're there to spend your money at Twickenham. And then the Championship is somewhere between these two. They're not in that sort of cosy club, that cosy circle. And they're not the grassroots game. They're something else. And they can't really find a role for them. That's the truth.
Mm. But it's this whole thing that... Because there was talk last week, I don't know if it's gone anywhere or going anywhere, of two more players coming onto joint contracts in Jamie George and Mario Toji were the two that were rumoured last week. And whatever happens now, it feels... it's only ever going to be like a kind of bad temporary solution. Like the time to do this was 25 years ago.
And if you think about
now,
sorry, Phil.
Yeah, no, no, go on.
No, what I was going to say is what is basically happening here is they've gone, right, we need to be sustainable because three clubs have gone bust. So I'll tell you how we're going to be sustainable. We'll lower the salary cap and then we'll pay the rest of the money that was there before, which is effectively what they're doing. They're pretending everything's all right, but they're spending money they don't have to keep the old status quo.
I just don't believe that spending money on hybrid contracts. Let's look at the three guys who are most likely to have them. Anthony Watson already has one.
Yeah.
He's a 30-year-old winger. And it, a 30-year-old winger.
With a phenomenal track record of getting injured.
Yeah. Mario Toji, 29. Jamie George, 30-something, right?
32, 33.
This is not how you spend your money. You are better off giving that money to the clubs to allocate in their salary cap as they see best.
Stephen Kitsoff said
and letting those guys go to France.
Yes.
Yeah.
And get big money from France, take up slots of other players in France and have them available.
And that's what came to mind just then. Stephen Kitsoff the other week was interviewed at your beloved Ulster, Phil.
Mm.
A good
great bloke.
Good win.
Good win good against Connacht.
Tight win against Connacht.
Who we lost to earlier this season as well.
So Stephen Kitsoff said that at age 29 in South Africa, he felt like he was blocking the pathway of some of the great young props. So he kind of felt like he, as well as...
Convenient excuse for picking up thousands of pounds, isn't it?
Yeah.
Fair play.
What a guy.
Go and earn what you can. But he says he thinks it's the best thing for the South African national team, as well as being the best thing for him an individual and his family.
Right. Yes.
Right. As a seasoned pro, you should go to the place which best suits your talents.
And... in such a short career, pays you the most money.
Exactly.
Because in 4 years' time, Stephen Kitsoff will not be earning whatever, like the hundreds of thousands of pounds a year that he's getting from Ulster.
It's hard to describe how much I really hate the RFU now that I really understand how the whole thing works. It is hard. Because it's not just the incompetence and the nastiness. Well, it is a nastiness, but it's a nastiness in so many different spheres. And one of the things which really gets me is just the entitlement to players' labour. They're not entitled... Not only are they not entitled to it, they actively damage players going forward. This is in every field. So you look at the concussion lawsuit, for instance. They'll do everything in their power to avoid the spectacle of a concussion and a knockout, but they won't do the only thing which really matters, which is reduce the amount of rugby. The only thing that matters, they won't do it because they don't care about players. You look at players struggling to leave the game because they don't have enough money. Well, they'll do everything in their power to build the national team and pay those players, but they won't make sure that all the players can earn their true market value. They don't care.
And there is a zero-sum element to this. So if next year Saracens say, we broke even this year or even made a modest profit, what you have to factor in is that you've been subsidised £500,000 by out of central coffers. So actually, you have not turned a profit. Mm.
I don't know.
In real terms, because it is a zero-sum game, because that money that the RFU are spending to subsidise Saracens keeping players that are well-established and could go off and get paid somewhere else.
But I don't even think that works, Tim. I don't even think it works by its own standards, because I do not think that keeping those players on central contracts at that age, in the same way Stephen Kitsoff sort of...
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you.
If I'm paying Mario Toji X amount of money... but he happens not to be the best lock this year, why should he play ahead of somebody else? Mm. Why should he play? Because you've paid him, because somebody in the RFU who's not on the ground day in, day out with these players has decided to give him money. Is that the reason that he plays? It's ridiculous.
And how would it work? Because I don't know, because I don't think this has been addressed. And it's all rumours anyway, there's no concrete proposals. But how does it work with Anthony Watson? Does that come out of Leicester's salary cap, or is it separate to the salary cap?
I imagine it must get counted within the cap. But
no, it won't do.
It can't, because what's the point of it then?
No one would sign up to that. So you get paid the money for Anthony Watson, you don't see him, but it kind of comes off your cap. I don't think you'd sign up to that.
I don't know how it works currently. I don't know how it would work in the future, unless it's going to be... The only way to do it is to evenly distribute the... money and all the players.
So, look at Mario. Mario is such a good example because he goes on a hybrid contract. And is it a rugby reason that they're doing that, or is it a PR reason? Because many, many great players have stepped aside and they've been replaced. Mario's no different. Brandon Driscoll got replaced in no time.
It's all rumours at the moment, so we don't really know. We don't know what the proposals would look like.
Paul O'Connell. Oh God, we'll never replace him.
Yes, she will.
In 2 seconds. Gone.
Yeah, yeah.
Next guy up. So the reason they want Maratoji so much, I suspect, is because of the PR disaster. It's got nothing to do with rugby. Nothing to do with rugby.
So the two little flow charts, as it would go, Maro going to France, let's say Racing 92 next year, and Maro staying at Saracens. The flow diagram that follows on from that is Saracens have £500,000 to invest in other players. There is a vacuum which has to be filled by someone. Hugh Tizard might have the season of his life.
Mm.
The only thing that would have to change is England change their eligibility rules, which I understand would be really annoying for the players who've turned down going abroad in recent years.
But I mean, it's not, you know, it can't be that much worse than what the players have already been through, to be honest.
And so I think you're right on the PR point. It's the owners of the Premiership, it's Premiership Rugby saying, hold on, our product's not going to look great if we lose.
I think it's a complete mixture of things. Actually, the answer to this is, get rid of the CVC deal. Right, we keep that. I can't believe we spoke all about this without actually remembering why all of this deck chair shuffling is occurring. It's because of the CVC deal. Never forget the CVC deal. Start the CVC deal and then start talking about everything else. And then this is why we're desperate.
You will never be able to unwind that CVC deal now.
Oh, yes, you will. But it's going to be very painful.
Sorry.
It's coming.
Sorry.
Lead again.
I'm in.
There you go.
It could unwind if the whole thing collapses, or it could unwind if you pay millions, tens of millions of pounds, or in fact, hundreds of millions of pounds that the Premiership Rugby clubs don't have.
Well, presumably, if Premiership Rugby and the RFU continue to do such a horrendous job with their own product, which is completely likely, I mean, the trend lines look promising, you could just buy that back off CVC.
But it's worth, so it was... What, £200 million that CVC paid?
What is it, 27% of every TV
and every
deal?
TV,
forevermore.
It's worth, I think it's worth, forevermore. So it's worth, even though the TV deals are static, it was probably still a good deal for CVC. So it's probably worth more than £200 million for the Premiership Club, £200 million that the Premiership Clubs do not have to buy out.
Well, where are CVC, on how many years has it been going now? About four?
Five?
Let's say 5 years at, what's the Premiership deal per year, 30 million.
40 million, I have in my head.
Let's say 40 million, 5 years. That's
12 million a year times 5 years, 60 million has been repaid of that 200 million.
200 million. So they only need another 10 years and CVC are in profit.
Well, hang on.
Just think about this. Such more.
If you get a group of wealthy owners, and there are a group of wealthy owners out there, how wealthy, I don't know. But if you did, and you just look at the trend lines of who's watching rugby, less and less people all of the time. You look at the expertise that CVC are willing and have put into rugby, which is zero. Fucking zero.
I'm going to stop, but more people are watching international rugby, but fewer people are watching Premiership.
So they've got this Premiership thing, which is decreasing in value, and the TV money is static, so in real terms it's decreased too. Then why not sell it back? So, okay, yeah, you can have this back, you know, at 60 million. We've got 12 million a year out for God knows how long or whatever it is. But you can have it back at half the price because we just don't want it. And we can probably put that money into something else.
That would be a right... So let's say 60 million. That means CVC have taken 60 million. They take another 60 million back. They lose 80 million on that deal. But they would... If they just hold on to it and for another 15 years, it has... covered their original investment, and then every year is pure profit.
Well, the question be then, if they just sold it back at cost, you know, whatever they paid for it, they sold it back, they'd still make a loss because of, you know, it's real terms.
It's more likely the opportunity they'd sell it onto someone else who'd go, that looks like a decent deal.
If CVC also...
I can sit tight for 10 years.
But they can't, can they? Because they need to make money every single year. So presumably the geniuses at CVC will go, yeah, we'll take our money back and we'll invest it in something which actually... performs, because in their mind this TV money was going to grow every single year. It was just a non-stop gravy train of success, much like it was for their F1 venture. Kind of.
But now they are doing nothing. They are doing absolutely nothing and just taking in whatever it is, 10-12 million a year.
That's for
nothing.
When you factor in it in inflation, the Premiership TV deal
has gone down.
Gone down a massive amount.
Down.
And that compounds as well.
Yeah.
Which is why we've got this shuffling of the deck chairs.
So the only thing would be the it's the opportunity cost of not investing that elsewhere. But if you're just getting 10, 12 million a year, like it will take, it's more than 100 million for the Premier, like just doing the rough numbers, it's more than 100 million for the Premiership clubs to buy CVC out of this deal. Best case, more than 100 million. They don't have more than 100 million.
No, but the owners might. Owners might decide. I mean,
one or two of them might, but then you're going to have an asymmetric ownership then. So, like, Steve Lansdowne could probably buy it out.
Yeah. I mean,
Sale Sharks can't.
They probably could. they could find the money for it if they need to. Sale Sharks, an organisation, cannot.
But then again, yeah. If it was a good deal for...
Newcastle couldn't, Leicester couldn't.
If it was a good enough deal for the Premiership clubs to buy it back, that would also say it's a good enough deal for CVC not to sell it.
To retain it.
Well, I guess my point would be, if CVC are looking at this thing and they are not doing anything with it, are they? It's just sitting on their books. And
getting them a nice bit of despite margin all, every year.
Well, they've got no risk. Unlike the Premiership clubs.
But they do have risk, don't they? Because if they're just sitting there...
Well, I'm sorry, they don't have any running costs.
Yeah, but if you look at the Premiership, right, their biggest risk is the whole thing falling over in its entirety, right?
Well, what they're avoiding. CVC are happy because the RFU are subsidising Premiership clubs, so that doesn't happen.
No, they're not, because we keep forgetting that the RFU money is only Premiership money rebadged and repackaged. RFU money is simply the product of Premiership players going to England and opening up Twickenham 12 times a year. That's all it is. So you have no Premiership, you have no England.
Yeah, but the amount of that money which the RFU are diverting back to the Premiership has increased.
Yeah, so
is increasing.
Look, the Premiership give these players to England, they get paid an amount, and then if the Premiership kept all of the revenue made by their players in Twickenham, right, if they bought Twickenham and had, you know, England, they would be far better off than giving their players for whatever the cost is, or, you know, the price that's paid, and keeping all of the revenue that they... I mean, they'd be...
So the RFU should just go into, below professional and event management.
Correct. Mm. Basically, correct. Mm. They have nothing to do with the professional sport, because they've proved themselves time and time again to be completely incompetent when it comes to it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so if CVC are doing nothing with this asset that they've got, and they think the Premiership might fall over, which it may well do, they could be wise to get rid of it. So a bunch of people who think, yeah, we can actually turn this into something which is profitable.
Yeah, but
I guess my point is, I just don't think the clubs...
Am I back in?
There you go.
I don't think the clubs have the money to buy them out. Like, not even close.
Well, the owners might, but when you mention Newcastle, no.
Yeah. No. It would have to be... It'd have to be like one or two owners, and then you've got this horrible asymmetric ownership where... Steve Lansdowne and Bruce Craig, yeah,
Gloucester,
they own the whole product, they probably don't either.
That'd be funny though.
But I tell you what, if you had one man with the vision of Simon Orange, or one man with the vision of Steve Lansdowne, or just one man, Tony Rowe, right? He doesn't have the means to do it.
No,
but like just one man's vision owning the majority of it. No one thinks that it'd be better off if there were 12 slightly different thinking versions of Dana White. Like you want one Dana White. It might not be the worst thing.
Oh no, I think it would be a better thing. I just don't think it's going to happen. Like it is not going to happen.
Agreed. Should we have a look at the fixtures for the Christmas? Well, the post Christmas week.
Friday 29th.
Got one game on Friday. Bristol Exeter.
Exeter.
Nice.
Chiefs.
I have really enjoyed the fact that the top 14. URC have been doing all the derby matches in this week. This seems the right time. I know Premiership had their derby week a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
This seems the right time to do the derby week.
It does. Are they full teams, though? Are they full strength teams?
Yeah.
No.
Like, perfect. Stormers v Bulls was a belter yesterday, 26-20.
Sorry, I asked kind of the wrong question there. Are the Irish teams the strongest teams?
Yes. Boxing Day, watch the St. Stephen's Day match.
Ooh, I will
down in Limerick, especially with the R.G. Snaiman news that he's going to be going to Leinster. That's going to be... actually, you don't even need that to make it spicy. Munster v Leinster is going to be something to watch on Boxing Day.
Particularly if R.G. Snaiman throws an intercept on his own line.
Well, he's not fit, so he won't play for Munster.
What
he's barely
shot.
Going to play for Munster. It'll probably go and be amazing for Leinster.
You probably will, won't you?
And that will just make it worse. But no, you've got Bristol Exeter, which feels a little bit derby-ish on Friday night, but then Saracens Newcastle on Saturday. Northampton Sale is the live game on Saturday.
That'll be a good game.
I'm reading these teams. I generally do not know if these are the two strongest teams they can put out or not, so I don't know why I'm reading them. Reading Munster Leinster.
You know with Leinster, is it an international player.
So, okay, Ross Maloney, Joe McCarthy, Max Deegan, Scott Penny, Jack Conan is the back
five. There is a few changes there, but I mean, very good.
Gibson
Park, Harry Byrne, Kieran Frawley, Gary Ringrose, Jordan Lama, Robbie Russell, Hugo Keane.
Who's Rob Russell?
He's a winger, but yeah,
I know that he's got 11 extra, isn't he?
They have made a few changes, to be fair. Munster look like they're going in fully loaded.
Kevin Nash is a cool name.
Calvin
Nash.
Yeah. Mm. But yeah, so I would have liked the Derby week in the Premiership to be this week. It just makes sense. But nevertheless, we have got, like I say, those games on Saturday.
Who's Thomas Clarkson? Don't know. I do know Jason Jenkins, Ryan Bird. Yeah, know him.
Bristol Exeter. Exeter managed to go unbeaten at home in all of 2023.
Perfect.
400 days now.
I mean, in my heart of hearts, I really hope Exeter give Bristol one hell of a beating. That would make my Christmas.
That's Friday night. You got that to look forward to.
Friday 29th.
Saracens Newcastle home win.
Big home win.
Northampton Sale. That's pretty tasty.
That'll be a good game.
Are we going to that?
The Langdon Bowl. No, it's the Bayonne game we got invited to at Northampton.
Are we going to that?
Mm. If you want to go to that.
I really want to go to that. Yeah, yeah.
That's Friday.
Your boys got beat this week, didn't they, Tim?
Yeah, they did.
Who did they play?
Perpignan.
Perpignan. Oh, yeah.
And who were in the relegation spot. Yeah. So, yeah, that's not good.
Disappointing. So whereas my boys, Bordeaux, hammered Lyon. Absolutely hammered them.
And I found out this week that my my boys, Benetton, employ Paolo Adogu. I did not know that.
Saints Sale. Quinns, you'd imagine, are going to beat Gloucester at home. Saints Sale's hard to call.
Yeah, that'll be a good game.
Really good.
I'm pretty sure Sale will batter them. I think Sale will hold their throat to the floor early doors and continue to hit them in the face until Northampton lose.
And I don't know what the plans
metaphorically
are. I don't know what plans are podcasting-wise around this period, but Leicester v Bath, New Year's Eve, 3 p.m.
When is New Year's Eve?
Sunday the 31st.
Week today.
I've got nothing on New Year's Eve. If anyone wants to invite me to a New Year's Eve party, I am available. I have literally nothing on.
Party, New Year's Eve podcast, maybe.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you bet. But yeah, if you want to go and get your
you do this because I have no interest in the.
Yeah, I'm not going to have any whiskey. I'm not. I've got to go. I've got to drive back.
Wheatwood Ales and Distillery.
I'll take some Wheatwood Ales though.
And JB said we got to set some beers as well. Was that?
Yeah, Wheatwood Ales, some IPAs, some real ales.
We are guns for hire. If you want any beers mentioned, no doubt as well, especially if they're nice. Oh yeah. Oh, I picked a good time to have an open house. If JB's bringing some of that round, nice. Went out to buy ice today. That was the last thing I had to buy. The only thing I had to buy on my list.
Handy.
Managed to get everything. Although sprouts and parsnips were hard to come by.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
The only thing I've had everything that I needed, apart from I had to go to three shops to get shallots.
Nice.
Because I'm doing Middle Eastern, Ottolenghi.
Oh, lovely.
This evening.
Oh, nice.
Need some shallots for that. And I'll probably realise tomorrow that I've forgotten loads of stuff. But.
Yeah, standard. It is mad, isn't it? You get like, you still panic a little bit. Oh, I've got about 2 months worth of food in. I'm effectively a prepper and still panic. Am I going to run out of something?
Shops
it's
are closed
24
for, yeah.
hours that the shops are shut.
Shops are closed for one day. So we have got the Cheshire Single Malt English Whiskey, second release by Wheatwood.
You can give your thoughts
premium
on the smell
English
anyway, Phil.
Malted barley, soft Cheshire water, matured in American oak quarter casks, which have been shaved, toasted, and recharged to our specification. One of only 2,170 bottle release.
Oh, wow.
And it's
and we're gonna have it with Coke.
Do you know what the soft water there they mentioned in Cheshire? Honestly, you cannot get nearly as good a cup of tea down south as you can up here.
That is so true.
It's so true because the water is above ground.
Yeah,
around these parts, whereas it comes through chalk and limestone and stuff in the south. It's horrible. When you get it out the tap, it's all cloudy.
So my favourite whiskey story is. A boy that you two used to play with once told me, "Oh, I was really getting into my whiskies."
I know exactly who this is.
Really getting into my whiskies. Oh, what are you into? He's like, "I found a really good one, Jim Beam Honey." It goes amazing with Coke. I was like, oh, you're really...
It's amazing with Coke.
You're really getting into your whiskies.
I'm terrible with whiskey. I want to be better. It's one of those.
Like, you've got to really put the time in.
Yeah.
So when I stopped drinking whiskey, so I kind of got into whiskey for a little bit, and the whiskey I got into was a Japanese whiskey. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, do some really good ones. Suntory do a lot of it.
Yeah, they do.
Our favourite brand.
And I was working at a solicitor's practice, and one of the guys there who used to be in the army, one of the other IFAs, who I massively respect, because he's been around the world and he knows his stuff, because this whiskey stuff, treat it with respect. Everything else you can go well with. Treat whiskey with respect. I remember driving home up the M56. I thought, God, I could do with a whiskey now. And at that point, I thought, no, this is what he's talking about. I thought, no more whiskey for me. No more whiskey.
I'm watching Slow Horses at the minute, and it's another one of those shows where, and it must be just a trope, I don't believe people actually do this. You know, whenever something stressful happens at work,
yes,
and they go over to the decanter on the little sideboard and pour themselves a big whiskey.
That's enough.
In the middle of the day. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I agreed. Like, when you see someone drinking neat gin, like, if I'm stressed, the last thing I want is a neat gin. Oh, God, it smells delicious. Mm. Oh, that does smell good.
It smells very good. I will have
a little... Oh, the lead's come out again.
Oh. Am I back in?
Yeah, there you go.
There we go.
Happy Christmas.
Yeah.
That's superb. Merry Christmas. Like, legitimately, that is superb. That's very smooth.
I can drink that. I can act that. Yeah. I don't have to.
Fair play.
That is,
that's good.
It's more like, so it's not like a Scotch single malt, no. not like a Highland or an Islay. Not peaty at all.
Now,
smooth.
If I was to give my opinion on this, I don't want to give my opinion on it. I'll tell you why. Because I don't want to upset the makers of it, because I might give my opinion and it might be completely what they're not going for. It does remind me of the very smooth Japanese whiskies.
Mm. It reminds me of a bourbon, slightly sweet, a hint of sweetness, but not too sweet. Now, one thing I've been told, so I'm not a big whiskey connoisseur, so this is 46%.
Yes.
So over. A friend of mine, a good friend of ours, friend of the pod, CJ, I think his father-in-law is certainly at some point been involved in the Edinburgh Whiskey Society.
Of course he has.
Of course. He moves in those circles. And he said... So CJ has definitely told me that you are supposed to water your whiskey down to 40%. So if it's 46 or 48 or even 42. And so a lot of Edinburgh whiskey bars or pubs will have a little copper tap that you can turn on the bar that a patron can turn on themselves, which will just drop a few drops just to get it to the perfectly level 40%.
That is absolutely superb.
It's
that because it's free. I'm saying it's free. That is genuinely superb.
Beautiful.
Mm. Have a wonderful Christmas. Thank you for your support over the year. And for more, where JB's question that you just posed at the start of the podcast, who's basically the biggest disaster of a DOR.
No, most embarrassing DOR.
Most embarrassing
DOR. So you can have a good DOR who's embarrassing.
Yes.
Or you can just have an embarrassing DOR who's embarrassing, who's bad.
All right, we'll do that there.
I've got some good ones. I've got two now.
52 weeks a year, remember.
I've got three.
And more, patreon.com/eggchasers. Let the pod end. Let the boys end.
The boys end.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.